dbkmediaservices.com. Listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SBC Sports Talk Podcast. SBC Sports Talk is brought to you by SBCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. And now, here are your hosts, Shane Combs and Bruce Knox.
Hello, SVC fans, wherever you may be and whatever you may be doing, and welcome to SVC Sports Talk. This is show 155 already, brought to you as always by Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe. We'll have more to say about them in just a little bit. I am Bruce Knox of DBK Media Services, and again, the guy that we all want to talk to about sports, Mr. Shane Combs, sitting across the desk from me of SVCSportsZone.com. Shane, how you doing tonight?
Great, Bruce. How about yourself?
I am wonderful. The weather has changed, my friend, and I'll bet you got a little bit of baseball and softball in the SVC this past week, didn't you?
Certainly did. We ended up getting it in bunches and made for some interesting scenarios, for sure.
I've been watching some of the scores roll in and so forth, and I see that there have, in fact, been some different kind of games out there, so we'll talk a little bit about that. Weather, like I mentioned, has changed in a hurry, and besides just getting in the game, do you feel like it's kind of, you know, changed the outlook of the sports world, so to speak? I mean, it just seems like all of a sudden, boom, we're into it.
Yeah, I certainly think that's the case. You know, I had a great conversation with a track coach the other day, Ben Burke out of Payne Valley, mm-hmm. and you know, I'm so invested into the baseball, and then obviously follow the softball through the website as well. And then with the track, I try to keep up with it. Well, Ben and I are really good friends there. We worked together out at school, and it was just interesting to hear his take, not just for his track program, but from what he had been hearing from other track coaches throughout the SVC. And, you know, with the weather, a lot of times they weren't able to get full meets in. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it would cut it short, or, you know, a lot of times coaches would be concerned about maybe overworking the athlete or just putting the athlete in miserable situations and so forth. So they might cut their evening down a little bit, not have them do all of their different events, or, in other words, not do an event. Say at 5 o'clock, and then an hour and 40 minutes later, try to get loose again on a really cold night or that type of thing. So I just thought it was fascinating to kind of hear how it influences another sport that I'm not around as much, but obviously being a sports fan, especially here in the SVC, I thought that was just fascinating. So what happens is, as we get into this week, I was able to notice some of the results come in on some nights where the weather was really, really good. And it was just kind of neat to see how the entire field was able to play out a little bit, and to see what some of our elite athletes were going to get involved in. And then, of course, on baseball, softball, the rain comes early in the week.
Yeah.
Then the sun shines the rest of the week. Well, you know, softball is probably the least influenced, because as we've talked about, you know, your pitcher is going to pitch.
Yeah.
She's going to take the ball and go to the circle, and it's not really that big a deal. And things are going to play out pretty normal, based on how, those kids throw the ball. On the baseball, it's the biggest influence of all of them, probably. It can really destroy your pitching staff in a hurry. And I'll tell you, if one game goes the wrong way, it could influence games in the next few days. I saw different examples throughout the league where all you had to do is look at the box score, and you could see where different games got away, maybe in the fourth or fifth inning. I'll just share an example that I had the other day as a Payne Valley coach. On Wednesday night, we got in a dog fight with Westfall, had to go a little deeper into our pitching staff than we wanted. We were fortunate enough to win that game. But that kind of bumped everybody up a night. Played a competitive game with Uniota the next night and lost that game. And by the time we got to Friday night, simply ran out of arms.
Yeah.
So at that point, as a coach, you have to make a decision. You know, it doesn't make it the right one or the wrong one. It just makes it the one that I make. Once you get down a certain amount, you have to kind of sit your ego to the side kind of set the ego to the side there and save some of those arms for a doubleheader the next day or for Monday coming up or so forth. So those are just some really fascinating things. I heard other coaches say it as well. I heard other coaches talk about how they tried to throw a couple kids Tuesday, Friday, and the arm just didn't react Friday quite as well as it would say on a Monday, Friday with that extra day of rest. And you know, so all of those things impact baseball where you probably don't see it in softball. That's not to say that a softball pitcher might just not simply fatigue over three, four straight days of going at it, but just not the same. So I think those are some things to look at here as the weather does some different things over the next month.
Well, I'm certain that we'll have weather over the next month or so. Whether it's good or bad, we'll have it, and we'll just have to see how it plays out. But it looks like for now that we're kind of going full speed ahead if we can keep these next two weeks going. So, hey, I want to talk a little bit about our flagship sponsor, that being the Triple Crown Family Fun Center located at 1 Nancy Wilson Way in Chillicothe. And as we always say, it's just a great place for people of all ages. You're never too young, too old to stop by. So for your next party or group event, you want to give them a call, 740-773-PLAY. That's 740-773-7529. You'll find them just off of Bridge Street behind the Hampton Inn. And Shane doesn't know this yet, but we have to this week Bruce's Delectable Treat of the Week. And it's going to be the gondola. My favorite sandwich, ham, pepperoni, cheese, lettuce, tomato, onion, banana peppers. Got to have the banana peppers, Shane, and Italian dressing. And then not only the gondola, but I want to go for the super gondola, so that which includes extra meat. So you can get that, you know, if you want to stop by on the next time and bring me one of those, that would be wonderful before you come into the studio.
I'll keep that in mind. Yeah,
I'm sure. And I'll continue to be hungry. That's all I can say. But fans, just give them a call, Triple Crown Family Fun Center. And we really do appreciate their involvement in the show. And then speaking of sponsors, Shane, I've heard you over the past couple weeks mention a new sponsor. And I wanted you to take an opportunity to tell us about C&K Athletics.
Yeah, Bruce, I appreciate the opportunity to do that. C&K Athletic Equipment, it's someone that I've come really familiar with up in Circleville, Ohio, through my baseball coaching. They're really good to the Southeast District, baseball, softball, track, and really all the sports. They try to get involved year-round. Check them out online. Go cnkathleticequipment.com. Give them a call, 740-477-9828. And as always, tell them Shane from svcsportszone.com sent you. I think if you're involved in coaching at any level, you'll like some of the results you get from that.
All right. Appreciate their involvement as well. And Shane, we wanted to kind of one of the topics that's kind of come up and been spurred on here by some emails and some discussions we had over the past week are the finances of spring sports. They're definitely different than the big football and some of the fall sports, and obviously a lot different than the basketball and the winter sports. So what challenges do you face in the spring in terms of equipment, uniform, field maintenance, and the finances for those?
Wow, there's some huge challenges, and you're right. This is something that comes up constantly because, again, what happens in the spring sports is you're not getting a chance to really create any income in terms of, you know, you're not really charging to get into games. I know even when we've had fortunate opportunities to go to the tournament, they don't give you the pre-sale opportunity that the other sports get, and it's just really kind of a stereotypical discussion that's out there about a lot of things spring sports, and I guess finances is no different. But all the way down to having some, you know, on the rainy weeks, some quick dry, some extra dirt, extra brick dust, trash pickup, you know, lining the field. Spring sport issues, a lot of times at a lot of schools, those are the coaches or those are the people involved in your program doing those things. Mm-hmm. And that can become quite the daily chore. You try to get real creative in your fundraising. Mm-hmm. And that takes numbers. It takes numbers in your program. Then it takes great parent involvement. But you have to be careful because a lot of times you're dealing with two and three sport athletes. So by the time you get to the spring, this parent's been asked to do this, sell this, say, why don't you support this? Again, it takes some creativity, but to say there's not some challenges financially in spring sports that other sports don't go through would probably be a little bit naive to the truth. That's not to say there's not financial issues in all sports.
Yeah.
But it just means in spring, we probably don't have the way to generate some of that money without getting real creative in some of the ways we do that. And, you know, Bruce, if I could sway from the agenda here a second,
sure.
And just tell me to shut up if I get boring here, or maybe this isn't even something we even talked about. It's just something that kind of has been on my mind this week. The OHSAA had come out with something this week talking about some of the key things at the top of their priority list, talking about new sports. And I believe it's lacrosse, which a lot of some of the bigger schools, I know down this way, like Chillicothe plays a little bit, I believe, on the girls' side. I'm not sure about, really in the southeast, I don't know how big a deal it is. But if you get up a little bit more north or a little bit over to the Cincinnati-Dayton area, you get into a lot of the bigger schools that are doing this. And I guess 2017 is going to be the first OHSA year where they're going to play their state tournaments and kind of be recognized. Well, the other thing that was on the agenda to talk a lot about was 8-on-8 football as a spring sport. And as a baseball coach, boy, do I thank Urban Meyer, because Urban Meyer actually, who has a son that plays, I can't remember the high school that the district he lives in up there. I believe it's one of the Watterson schools up there. The
Bishop Watterson.
I believe so. Don't quote me on that, but I think I'm right on that. And, you know, he talked about, and for people who don't know, Urban Meyer was a great baseball player growing up, had an opportunity to really play at a pretty high level. So I certainly appreciate him speaking out in favor of other, he called it other sports, the other sports, in terms of he thinks that could really destroy some of those other sports at some of the small schools. Now, with that said, the reason I kind of thought about this, kind of right off the top here, as we started talking finances, as you know as well as I do, your football gates, even if your football team's awful, more times than not, probably generates the majority of your income in your athletic program. So there's a lot of administrators, I'm sure, are a little bit intrigued by the thought of having a little 8-on-8 football in the spring, where maybe we pick up another 3, 4, 5 home games and get some of that gate. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I did some research earlier in the week, to be honest, for the show. I wish I would have brought it along a little bit more. But for people who don't know, the 8-on-8 football is just kind of a smaller version on the 11-on-11. I believe, if I remember correctly when I was researching it, you're doing a similar situation of the formation. You're taking about 3 linemen. You got to have 5 on the line of scrimmage. The people on the end there are the eligible receivers and so forth. And you're basically – so imagine just a formation with 3 linemen, basically. Mm-hmm. And, throughout the country – I want to say my research showed like 30 different states doing some of the sponsored or reduced player football. I know it was in the thousands as of like 2015. It was in the thousands of the schools across the country that were doing this. And like I said, I'm almost positive it was 30 states. Now, some of your states around here, obviously, Indiana, Kentucky is your basketball states. They're not doing it. I was surprised to see Pennsylvania is not doing it. Michigan had a little bit of a version of it, but you get a lot of it down into your SEC country.
Mm-hmm.
You get a lot of it. Like you and I grew up knowing the Big 8 country, now your Big 12, your Texas, Oklahoma areas, those schools that really love them some football. I just have to wonder, the way the OHSA laid it out, they talked like this was going to be something that was going to become a high priority. Man, I tell you, as a baseball coach, that's concerning. That really is. I mean, I know people love football. They love to make money. They do all those things. But that becomes a really, really concerning thing to a baseball coach at a small school, especially in a community that loves their football.
Yeah.
That would almost do in the remainder of the sports.
So you think maybe Urban Meyer's hand is in this? Is that true?
I don't know, to be honest. I mean, obviously he wants to be a great ambassador for the sport of football, I'm sure, in his state. I know that he probably, I think what most football people would tell you is, hey, this 8-on-8's kind of our way of compromising.
Mm-hmm.
Well, whatever that means,
I was just thinking about it. It would probably not be as susceptible to weather You know, you could play in the rain. They could play in the cold. You know, some of the stuff that you guys deal with in baseball and in track as well. But you're right. It would just kind of decimate probably your baseball programs and softball. Well, obviously not your softball programs. But and then there are, you know, probably some you get more use out of that nice football stadium that you've paid so much for and return on your investment from the administration.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I mean, I think what would happen up front, I think, is your junior high and your JV levels would be in serious trouble. And then obviously anytime those get in trouble, it really becomes over the next 3 to 5 year span a difficulty at the varsity level. I think some schools would have to really take a look at how much they want to support something like that and back it. Because, you know, some schools, when you look at the way football works out, and you look at use fall as your example. Mm-hmm. You know, their cross country programs, their soccer programs, their golf programs, they don't really hurt because, let's face it, they're not very good at football, or their community over a 20, 30 year history, 40 year history, whatever. Maybe it just hasn't been that big a deal. They have it. Mm-hmm. They enjoy stopping by on a Friday night 4 or 5 times a year and whatnot. But man, when you start getting to the spring at the schools that really like it, again, that's going to start to really take some athletes off the track, take some athletes off the baseball diamond for sure.
Well, it's an interesting concept, and I'm sure, you know, we'd like to hear what the listeners have to think, what they think about it. So you can give us some feedback. We'll give you that opportunity here in just a little bit on methods on how to do that. So we got to move along with the show here, and coming up, we have an email, and it has some buckshot to it and offers some more intense feedback from last week's show. We'll get to it in just a moment. Well, Shane, I indicated earlier we had a really great email come in, and we're going to kind of try to break this down because it is about a page and a half or so of good stuff, and it's got about 3 or 4 topics, and all of them kind of touch on some of the stuff that we've been going through, kind of also go off on a little tangent, but good topics for discussion. Let me kind of set the stage here. Person, just out of curiosity or out of just for your information, I guess, did not include their name, said that wasn't important, but they had at least a few topics to provide for us to go over. Let me set the stage here. This person is a parent of 3 children, all involved in a total of 11 different sports throughout the year. They have 1 in high school, 2 in elementary school. The person works full time, completing their MBA, and they coach youth baseball and softball. And obviously this makes for a crazy schedule, indicated that they had at least 6 practices and 8 games in 1 week. So they are well into some of these situations that we've talked about in the past. And the first topic that they bring up is that of practices and how this particular parent and youth coach feels that practices are not optional and that playing a sport or being in a club is a choice. And for that reason, the practices are not optional. They talk about if a player misses practice without being able to document an illness or injury or a family emergency, or they even went so far as saying a documented death in the family, they should receive punishment. And habitual absence should result in being removed from the roster. They go on to, I guess I'll stop right there, Shane, and kind of talk about maybe different policies that you've heard about missing practices, because they go on to say maybe there's some kids out there that have a sense of entitlement.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as a coach and an educator, I agree with the overall principle of the majority of the email. I think what's unique is the perspective maybe I can give is throughout each topic that you're going to break down there, as I was reading it, I was finding myself looking back and forth from the school setting, being a teacher and a coach, mm-hmm. compared to maybe getting the opportunity to coach down at the younger levels away from the school setting. What I have found over 20 years of coaching is the influence of our little leagues, our club sports, our YMCA, our different, whatever it might be, so valuable. Because I agree with the punishment of practice and the different things and the importance and some of the things that sports can teach there. I think what is really, really interesting here, and this is where parent involvement is huge, I think it gets interesting throughout the some of those little leagues, be a Cider Valley Youth League or YMCA situation. As you move into the schools and you start to get into some different things, as parents start to give way, as kids start to drive later on and so forth, I think there's a lot of different challenges there. There's also a lot more of the politics that do get involved as you get a little bit older, when you start having teachers, say, coaching a junior high sport, or if you have teachers coaching a JV sport. There's a lot of challenges there that go on, and I'll kind of touch on those throughout. But yeah, I mean, in that first point that you're making, obviously as a coach, you know, I had a college coach one time tell me, you know, Shane, as you get into coaching, just remember, if you have rules, you have to enforce them. Mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? So a lot of times it's one of those things that, you know, I make rules and my kids understand what the consequences are if they miss, and if they miss again or whatnot, they understand that. I'm the first to admit that I was far more hardcore in my first 2, 3, 4 years of coaching. As I've gotten older, I've probably started to understand some different challenges and some different things, especially at a small school. You know, I can be as hardcore as I want to be, but at the same time, I have to figure out how can I best get as many kids involved in the Paint Valley baseball program while still keeping them following rules and making for a successful situation. And that doesn't just mean wins and losses, but it certainly means running a quality program. Obviously, the more numbers we can have and the different things we go through, we benefit from that. But yeah, I think that's an interesting starting point. I obviously agree with it. I think as we go through here, I'll be able to talk a little bit about the different challenges depending on the environment that you're coaching in.
Well, the email goes on then in the, basically in the same topic, and says, you know, first of all, that it seems to this person that kids have a sense of entitlement, and this is because of the way they've been raised by their parents and the way that they've been babied, that's the term that they use, in the community. And also makes the point, it doesn't matter how good or bad the player is, missing a practice results in some punishment. And they hold that out as a life lesson. And, excuse me, they go on to say their particular son is involved in 3 different school sports, 2 different school clubs, and he's taking a lot of accelerated courses and so forth, and he's still got to do his chores at home to earn money for the extra things and so forth. And so they go on to talk about, you know, where is this mentality that we, and that's in quotation marks, were raised with, and why have parents, teachers, and coaches become soft on our children? Have we become soft on our children with respect to this type of thing? I mean, is it worse than it was? Are kids missing practices for more things, or are we just more sensitive to it?
You know, I can't comment overall around the SVC. It'd be something I'd be interested to talk to more and more coaches. Now, the word soft is certainly interesting. I don't know. Guys who used to play for me that now coach for me tell me every day, man, you've gone soft. You know what I mean? Yeah. So maybe so. I think most of my players would tell you that, you know, I'm not. You know, I think it's a situation in terms of the school setting. I think what happens a lot of times is, you know, you're setting the rules, but a lot of times you're working for a school district. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where at the end of the day, you're working 1 year at a time, you know, and you're being basically applying again that year, and you're being hired back. And I think what happens a lot of times, I think it's a great opportunity sometimes to be coaching in a situation where you're not a teacher anymore. You've heard me say on the show before that when I first started getting into education, if you were going to be a coach, you really wanted to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. Well, here in the last 5 to 10 years, because of the way finances have worked with staffing of teachers and so forth, it's almost the opposite way around. A lot of times you can almost walk in and do, as this person says, a more hardcore, straightforward role if you're not. Because keep in mind what happens is at the end of the day, they call it a supplemental for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, I coach high school baseball simply because I love to do it. I coach some high school basketball because I love to do it. I've coached some high school golf because I love to do it. I just love being around kids. I love sports. I love to do different things. I've even gone and coached some junior high basketball just when they needed a help or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, I certainly wasn't doing it to pay my mortgage. Yeah. I wasn't doing it to pay my car. I wasn't doing it to pay my AEP bill. You know what I mean? It's one of those things where you're doing it because you enjoy it. Yeah, you get compensated a little bit. But at the end of the day, I have to make sure that I am, for lack of a better term, and this is something I've learned with age, I have to make sure that I can have these quote-unquote hardcore rules or these old-school rules and implement them in a way that the administration that I work for is very comfortable with, that they can be supportive of. And I've got to make sure that I go about it in a 2016 way, like it or not, that I can incorporate. Now, what I love about the email, though, is the opportunity to do some of these things in the club sport or in the little league format or in the YMCA. Now these are getting into things. I do love the opportunity of how we can reach parents as well. Cause really what you're doing at the younger level is you're challenging the parents to have that perfect attendance as much as you are the kid. Cause let's face it. If you're coaching a 12-year-old son or daughter of someone, they're probably not the reason they have perfect attendance. Mm-hmm. It's obviously the parents are making sure that they're there. The parents are making sure that they're getting involved in different things and so forth. So I love the overall principle of the email. It certainly kind of opened up some ideas to me in terms of something that honestly I hadn't thought about. You know, the difference, say, of coaching baseball at your local high school compared to maybe down the road at a little league setting.
Yeah, unfortunately, we just can't do the. I mean, this could really grow tentacles, and this is
sure.
This could be a couple episodes of talking about it, because on the one side I see, you know, you've got to have everybody there. You're part of a team. On the other side, experiencing, you know, I've not been an educator, but I've worked with kids enough that I know there are some things that come up, and not all of them are listed here by this particular person. So I wish we could continue to talk about it, but we got to kind of move on to some of the other topics that are included in the email, including this one. And the email writer says, one issue that really torques me as a parent and coach is watching a pitcher go from pitching or catching or vice versa, from pitching to catching or vice versa. And the person makes the point that both particular positions have their own stresses, and some of them are, you know, on parts of the body that you'll utilize in the other thing. So if, as a coach, Shane, do you see an issue moving a pitcher to catcher? Or that catcher that's caught the first three innings, can they go out to the mound? Do you have an issue with that, or is that commonplace in your world?
Well, you don't want it to be commonplace. Again, from a principal standpoint here, I certainly agree with the concept. In the perfect world, no. You try to avoid it.
Okay.
Now, I'll be honest. Sometimes you can't. In 20 years, I've had probably 2, 3, 4 times. You know, I can think of just some kids off the top of my head. What you're trying to do there, Bruce, that's really difficult. It's not just the same day. You know, a lot of times it's a kid threw a complete game on Friday night, and daggone it, there, your only other catcher, and the kid who caught all week, you hate to have him catch two games on Saturday. You really need that kid to go back there and catch a game or whatnot. It's certainly not ideal. I think where I really agree with the email is the stress of the entire body, not just the arm. You know, a lot of times I can teach the catcher to, you know, kind of play a little toss back to the pitcher or something like that. He might only really have to turn the ball loose on a couple steals or a couple different things throughout the game. I think the biggest issue is the legs. I certainly agree there. You know, and I think you have to really look to see what's the role of this kid on the team throughout the week. If they are doing this on a Saturday doubleheader, well, what's their role? What was their role on Thursday, Friday night leading up to that? What's their role going to be on Monday? Are you going to be able to protect the legs and arm a little bit more? What's been their training leading up to that particular point? Because what I tell you, you heard Jeremy and I talk about this last week a little bit, almost more than the catcher, you know, making that repetitive throw back to the pitcher where maybe they're just kind of tossing it back. Or a lot of times what I'll try to really teach them is how to conserve the arm, especially in these unique situations. What scares me even more sometimes in high school baseball is, let's face it, some of your pitchers and catchers are your best players.
Yeah.
So let's say they're a shortstop. Well, so-and-so throws his 105 pitch complete game on a Wednesday night, and you're coming back to on a Thursday to play, and you know he's stuck in a situation where he fields a ball in the hole two or three times in the first couple innings and has to turn that ball loose. Those are some of the violent throws, or some of the violent throws from the outfield. So really, it's something that is scary to a coach in all situations. I think the catcher pitcher question or scenario is really, really interesting, and again, it's something that's not ideal. It is something that I've utilized before. It's not something that you do a lot. I mean, most high school teams certainly have their one catcher. If it happened in a scrimmage, again, not ideal.
Yeah.
And I don't want to speak for a coach. It could be a situation where, again, you don't have very many opportunities to go live. So you're trying to maybe make sure that kid gets a chance to do some pitching and some catching in that live situation of scrimmage. Again, that's for each kid or each coach, to figure out. Man, that's an interesting discussion. That's why I love the show, is you always get some feedback that allows you to go in a couple different directions than maybe the show did the week before. And hopefully this email has sparked a little bit of interest to where other people have some opinions on this. Again, I guess in summary there, in the perfect world, I agree. I don't like to do it. Have I before? Yeah, a little bit. I wouldn't say I've overused it, but it's certainly a valid point.
The writer caps off that particular section of the email by saying, what is more important, the health of the player or the record of the team? And I think you've kind of covered that and said that there's considerations both ways. But
you know what's funny about that, Bruce? Obviously, I'm never going to put the danger of a kid in front of winning a high school baseball game. But you know what's funny sometimes is, you know, when you make a decision to protect a kid, mm-hmm. and it might result in the score getting really, really ugly, not all adults in the process see it. Well, no, they don't see it as that, as, hey, you're costing my kid's team a chance to win because you're not playing your best kid. So it's an interesting dynamic for sure.
Well, this, like I said, this has a lot of buckshot in this whole email. And again, we could talk about that. The final topic here that they covered is kind of in response to what we've talked about in the past about how, it cites baseball and softball, how they don't have this big following, but that following that they do have is perhaps more passionate. And that, they surmised, is because it takes a great deal of knowledge or sport-related IQ to understand what's going on in the games. And they continue to build up a case for giving them several scenarios about, you know, maybe something your average mom or dad may or may not know is going on in the game at the time that it's actually occurring. Like, you know, why did they just let that person that just went to first base on balls, why do they allow them to go to second and not throw down when there's someone standing on third? I mean, that's a fairly elementary idea, but this writer makes two or three different arguments about that. In other words, there's so much intellectual, if you will, about baseball and softball vis-a-vis some of the other sports. And I first want to hear your opinion. I have some opinions of my own on that.
Well, here, there's some people that have listened to the show a long time thinking, oh, goodness, this person just got shade going on Little League sports. What in the world? No, I honestly, I'm going to try to make this point very quickly. I guess anytime I start to hear these things, I immediately start to think of, I can't hardly watch Little League. Like, I was at a junior high baseball game today watching a nephew play. I can't hardly watch Little League or junior high or whatever without thinking about how it correlates to the high school level. So sometimes I'm the wrong person to ask on these situations, because I think where we get stuck sometimes, Bruce, in terms of understanding the game, is things happen in Little League that happen because it's Little League. It, yeah. You know, first of all, and this is where coaching comes into play. First of all, the old take ball four and never stop running because yeah. the 10-year-old can't throw it to second. yeah. That in itself is a whole nother debate, okay, in terms of how we teach kids. Or, you know, a lot of times at the Little League level, we'll see the man on first, ground ball to third. Hey, the right thing to do is throw it to second base, but if we do, we're probably going to throw it in the right field and we might lose a C-ball game. Well, again, so what do? We teach our third baseman to field it and they put it up in near time. Oh, gosh, I mean, it's hard to watch. You know what I'm saying? It's one of those things where, so when we start talking about are we trying to win or lose or whatever, those are all the things that happen. But yeah, I agree with the point in the email from the standpoint of there's certainly things in baseball that maybe the average sports fan you don't quite understand. But I think there's also something to be said in terms of, you know, how can we start teaching the game that correlates to more of the next level or the higher level? Because I'm telling you, when you start to get to the junior high and you go onto these bigger fields and then, you know, you go to JV and you go to varsity, the game keeps getting quicker. And it's kind of a weird dynamic sometimes in terms of some of the coaching philosophy, because if you have some elite athletes that understand a little bit more, yeah, you can do a lot of things to dominate a little league or even a junior high game. But again, you got to ask yourself, how is this going to correlate to a higher level of baseball on down the road?
Well, I was going to say, I didn't play baseball. I played football and basketball. But I just think there are things, nuances about basketball and football that maybe other people wouldn't understand. So I don't necessarily agree, I think, with this supposition that this particular paragraph covers, where, oh, baseball is so much more intellectual, or softball is so much more, you know, strategy than, say, basketball or volleyball or anything else. I think they all have their own little things, nuances that can lead to building a passionate and maybe smaller crowd sometime too. But I think baseball's not quite as social, if you will, maybe as basketball or football. I don't know. It doesn't provide so much visiting time. Maybe it provides more, but it's kind of slower. I don't know, but
it is. Yeah. There's no question about that. And I guess where I think you make a fair point there. I guess where I'm probably more in line to agree with this part of the email is, I think a lot of times people see baseball or softball as a little bit of a slower sport because they don't quite understand all the different things that are being figured out during that quote unquote downtime.
I see.
Yeah. In terms of in each dugout, there's so much strategy and different things there. So, yeah, I mean, I certainly understand both sides of it. I think that's where a lot of times, though, the traditionalist, I've always said, I don't know that they care to speed the game up or different things. If you don't like baseball, softball, whatever, that's okay. We're going to get player Dave. I mean, I think there's a lot to that.
Well, I wanted to let the emailer know that there's more in here, granted, but we're going to have to move along. And we do appreciate this, though. Someone, obviously, I noticed it was sent from his or her iPad, and they must have spent a lot of time working on this email, and it is packed full of stuff that we could talk about, and that's the kind of stuff we would like to have. So,
well, and what makes it nice is I get so many texts and so many emails and different things. That one really well put together email covered and was able to get feedback out there that I know 6-7 other different people were wanting to talk about. So that's good stuff.
All right. Well, great conversation we've had here, and we'll if you stay with us through the break, up next, Shane shares some feedback talking about what one elite pitcher thinks about pitch count. Well, welcome back to show 155 of the SVC Sports Talk. Bruce Knox along with Shane Combs here, taking you through this week's episode. Last week, a lot of discussion, Shane, regarding the pitch count. And we talked softball last week. Did it matter and so forth? And baseball, you know, is it dependent upon other things other than the count? So let's kind of review some of the feedback that you received this week. First was softball.
Yeah, basically a ton of feedback coming in. I don't know how much stuff is different. It's a lot of repetitive stuff. I think probably the one that jumped out at me the most was softball. Is a good friend of mine that I've coached with in the past, coach Chris Medved. He has the Paint Valley softball program right now. He's obviously in the middle of coaching a really once in a career type of player in Michaela Newland. And he has that baseball background. And I asked him if it was hard for him to get used to the concept of just having a pitcher and going out there and throwing her out there every day. And he said it really was. You know, he started to look at some different pitch counts and should I pitch her back to back days? Can I pitch her 3 days in a row? Can I pitch her 4 days in a row? And he told me a funny story on the bus the other night. He said, when he talked to Michaela about it, he even had Michaela's parents there. Chris knew that, hey, Michaela's a kid that can, you know, go to the next level, which she's going to now. As you know, a lot of fans will remember, we had her on an earlier show this year on SVC Sports Talk where we talked to her about her college opportunities. And she told a funny story one time on her travel team, the where their number two was hurt and they got stuck in a 3 day tournament where in these things, I guess they play all kinds of games. Yeah. She threw close to 800 pitches in 3 days.
Wow.
now, you know, that does that mean it's okay for everybody? No, you're talking about a special, special athlete who has been doing this for a long, long time. You're talking about a kid that year around is on a very, very strict routine, throwing routine, workout schedule. Now, so that's not going to work for everybody, but that's just an example of the fatigue in the arm and the legs and the body and different things is certainly a concern, but it's going to be different for everybody. And obviously there hasn't been enough proof in terms of that particular throwing motion to bring any type of rules down. So it's something we'll continue to follow. It's kind of fascinating, but that was a crazy story that I thought I would share there a little bit.
What about baseball?
Well, baseball's more of the same. It's kind of an agree to disagree type of thing. You know, you get a lot of repetitive stuff. A lot of people say they don't really like the 10 innings in 3 days, but they try to keep it down to more of a seven. I actually asked several high school coaches to – obviously, I have more access to baseball coaches through email and just through friendships and through text and so forth. I ended up getting about 8 or 9 back, and probably the most common repeat was know your kid. You know, it's not really a number. Some people talked about the stressful pitches, the stressful innings. A lot of times people said, I try to keep it at 7 innings in 3 days until the second half of the year. A lot of people said, the old Monday, Friday, Wednesday, Saturday usually makes sense. But again, probably the know your kid has been the most common thing. And that certainly makes a lot of sense to me because, you know, I know I'm currently coaching about 4 or 5 pitchers and not one of them are the same. Some of them can throw 100 pitches on Monday. And if I need them to, say, close a game for an inning on Wednesday, they could. Some of them throw that on Monday. They need till Friday before they can throw again. And a lot of it goes back to their role. If a kid's going to be playing shortstop the next 2 nights, that's a little harder on his arm. If a kid's just going to be DHing for the next 3 nights, well, I'm sure their arm is going to feel a little bit better in a day or two if they're just doing some of their side stretching and long toss and running and so forth. So,
all right.
Pretty good stuff. Appreciate the feedback.
Appreciate it. And you can get a hold of us. We'll talk more about that in just a little bit. Shane, let's go to extra innings.
Yeah, that'd be great. This segment, as listeners know by now, because of the great sponsorship from Crown Hill Golf Club. That's located U.S. Route 22, west in Williamsport, minutes from Route 104. Boy, with the weather changing, Bruce, what a great time to take advantage of the golf
and the Crown Hill Golf Club would be a great place to do it. All you have to do is give Dave or Kevin a call, 740-986-GOLF. That's 740-986-4653. And again, when you ask for Dave or Kevin, tell them SVCSportsZone.com sent you. Well, this week, Bruce, we get some different parts of the website involved, and it should be a lot of fun spreading the wealth across all of our sports. So if you're okay with that, let's go ahead and get going with this week's version of Extra Innings.
This week, the website started posting the Adena Sports Medicine SVC Leaders page. What jumps out at you in terms of pitching?
Well, first, I should say on the Adena Sports Medicine, if you're listening to this early in the week, you'll see the baseball update. That was pretty much up through the end of the week, the regular week last week. The softball, again, if you're listening early, may not be quite posted. It should be by midweek. We're still trying to get a couple more of those in. But what really jumps out at me on the baseball side, Bruce, is just the depth and how that depth's being challenged. I see teams pitching 3 and 4 guys, and a lot of times that's not the norm. You know, if we stay on the normal Monday, Wednesday, Friday, you don't see that. Where the way a couple of these weeks have unfolded, I see a lot more depth and a lot more names beyond just your ones and twos. The softball, I've had an opportunity to see some of them, even though they're not posted. So, again, be patient with us. We're getting those up. But the Newland and the Blevins numbers from Paint Valley and Uniota will just blow you away on some of the things that those two are posting. That's going to be quite the player of the year race on the softball side.
Staying with the stats, what catches your eye on the offensive side of things?
Well, in the baseball side, I think the Zane Trace and Adena balance, the way they combine the speed and the average and the power and they're just how complete they are in terms of the way they can score. And then on the softball, I think minus that Newland-Blevins situation, I see how it's not necessarily the stats as much as it is maybe our good health chiropractic center sponsored scoreboard. Where take a look at Westfall. Westfall's really killing some of the other pitching around the league. They're really scoring some big runs. Then they've been really silenced by Newland and Blevins. So I think what that tells you is the capabilities of that Westfall offense. But again, it kind of reminds you of what I said there in question one about just how good those two pitchers are.
One of the great track events in the early going every year is the Andy Haynes Invite at BV. When looking over the results, what was most caught your attention?
Probably, you know, beyond the enrollment, people have heard me talk about that before in terms of the team results. So, and beyond the enrollment of like a Chillicothe and Zane Trace on the girls' side and a Waverly on the boys' side, I was really impressed with how some of these smaller schools that, you know, yeah, come league night, will they be able to compete overall with the Uniota Zane Trace? Probably not. Maybe. We'll see. But, man, they really have some opportunities, Bruce, in the postseason when they split into their own division. You know, I know on the girls' side, I see Rachel Foster, Taylor Clarkson, Alexis Putnam. Those are all kids winning from Adena. Ella Skeens wins a couple. Edged out Hackworth of Pink Valley in the high jump. Blommer of Zane Trace was a winner. But keep in mind, Zane Trace only really gets one individual winner. And still is up there at the top. I just shows you their depth. On the boys' side, I know Kent Dunn of Southeastern had a couple wins. Tony Hatfield had like 3 wins in a second. The two Paint Valley throwers, Ott and Burton, continue to go. Good to see Brian Hall back out on the track. The Harris kid of Zane Trace. I also, from last week's show, Bruce, I noticed some Adena relays in the boys and girls. We talked about that, how a lot of times those smaller schools will put some elite kids. So I guess that's what jumped out at me is beyond the team standings of some of the bigger schools, I'm real impressed with how some of the individual talent from what is kind of the bottom of the enrollment in the SVC is going to really, really have a good spring, I think.
This week starts round 2 of SVC play on the diamond. Is there a team that has a big advantage in terms of chasing down a league title?
You know, I don't know. I mean, in softball, I guess Uniota would simply have to have the advantage just because they're up. You know, by the time people listen to this show, Zane Trace and Uniota will have played. If Uniota is able to win that game, boy, do they certainly have a big advantage of opening up a little bit of a gap there with Blevins. Because keep in mind, again, softball, you're never going to catch a night beyond an unfortunate injury or sickness or something like that where you're going to play Uniota without Blevins in total control of the game. So that makes it difficult. Baseball-wise,
man, Adina's probably the most complete, but the Zane Trace offense is incredible. And the Uniota pitching and defense, although young, is very, very good. But keep in mind, a lot of it in baseball becomes the timing of the schedule, because as those teams start to play, are you going to run into a Pop or a Dye or a McFadden or one of those really, really elite arms? So, again, weather could certainly continue to play a role. Really, it's anybody's league in terms of those top three teams.
Right, that is our extra innings, of course, brought to you by the Crown Hill Golf Club. Give them a call, 740-986-GOLF. That's 740-986-4653. Want to remind you, too, as we've kind of touched on, we thrive on your feedback, and you can provide us that feedback through Facebook. Shane has two profiles out there. One is the SBCSportsZone.com, and one is Shane Combs. And you can also hit us up on Twitter. That's becoming more and more popular, it seems. The email, which is admin1@svcsportszone.com, or you can give us a call, 740-569-3254, and you can leave us a message there, and we'll get back to you, or just take your input, and we'd love to have some more input. These have been several different topics here that I can see people disagreeing, I can see people agreeing and supporting their case either way on some of these things. So we'd love to hear from you. We do appreciate so much those that have reached out to us through text or whatever as well. Well, when we think about sports, we would be remiss probably if we didn't touch on this next topic. Let's shift gears back a little bit to winter, and this is some off-season news, but something that we kind of want to touch on here, and that's that we've seen two boys coaches step down in the league. And so I'm sure, Shane, that you've been asked about what your reaction is to those issues, or those events, I should say.
Well, they are. And I tell you, Bruce, since we're going back to maybe getting some basketball people interested in a spring show, let me go ahead and make this question sponsored by CNK Athletic Equipment. Again, check that out at cnkathleticequipment.com or give them a call, 740-477-9828. So again, our basketball coaches here in the off season, give them a chance to maybe to get involved in some of the things that you're trying to do in your off season. Well, yeah, you're right, Bruce. I mean, we've had Jason Smith at Adina and Trevor Youngkin at Westfall, and you heard me mention touch on this. I believe it was last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, where I kind of knew it was coming. I didn't want to say anything at that point until maybe they had a chance to talk to their players or so forth. I always hate to see things leak out before coaches in today's social media time maybe have a chance to sit down with the families or sit down with the kids and tell them first. Both did a solid job. They really did. Let's be honest here, and I'm not trying to offend anybody. Both coached in situations where basketball's not first. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's a challenge. There's resources in terms of hiring a staff. A lot of times you go hire a staff, and you know maybe certain assistants need a teaching job, or you know the overall fundraising, or the community, or the tradition. All of those different things. You know, maybe you don't have paid assistants. Maybe you don't have different things. So, you know, when I say basketball is not first, I'm not trying to criticize or that's just kind of the way we look at things. You go around the league and you kind of understand at different schools what's kind of has tradition, what happened, you know, what the community really rallies around over a 15, 20, 30 year period. So I commend them for the job that they've done there. They've done a super, super job at their schools. You know, Jason made a nice progression throughout. They were able to end with a combo run this year. Again, I think Jason did a super job in the development of Jonathan Thomas, one of the elite players in our league history in terms of scoring to basketball. And then again, Trevor comes into a situation there at Westfall where, you know, they obviously love them some football. Baseball's been very good. Basketball's been a very hit and miss thing. I don't know. I mean, it's a situation where I wish those two the best. I certainly hope they're not done coaching. Maybe they're going to take some time off with family or whatever. Sure, but sure. Man, I think both of them offer a lot, and so I would say congrats to them and good luck to them. I you know Jason's a really really good friend of mine, and I really appreciated the opportunity to get to know Trevor this past year a little bit better, and I just think both of them did an outstanding job.
Are you hearing anything on the girls' side?
You know, Bruce, I'm going to kind of go ahead and keep it the same way I did last week. I don't anticipate anything. I think there's still a few in question, is the way I would put it. As it appears now, I don't think there's going to be anything drastic. I think there's some factors that'll go into these things. Again, anytime you're dealing with the supplemental issue that I talked about earlier, you know, it's not the real job, so to speak. But, you become good friends with a lot of these people, and you know they kind of trust in you to talk to you a little bit. So I don't foresee anything major, but I'll kind of hold off a little bit until you know maybe some upcoming shows.
Fair enough. Anyway, folks, our final segment throughout the spring season here, we call it the post-game comments. Of course, brought to you by Crown Hill Golf Club, and you can check out their websites for so many of the specials and so forth that Shane's already talked about at crownhillgolfclub.com. And as we always say, anytime you visit the golf course, make sure you tell them that you heard about them on svcsportszone.com and SVC Sports Talk. So let's move into the post-game segment. And this one's kind of an unfortunate thing that we heard about late in the week. It broke, and that was the vandalism to the Unioto Athletic Complex. And I understand several fans have asked you for your reaction to that. What was it when you heard about it, Shane?
Well, I would certainly probably use the word unfortunate. I understand how much work, how much money, how long it takes. I mean, it's always funny how these agendas on our show kind of come full circle and you don't even mean for them to. We just spent earlier in the show talking about how much work and money and fundraising and creativity it takes to do the things. And let's face it, few people in the Southeast District, you could probably get in your car and drive an hour in any direction, and you're not going to find too many athletic facilities nicer than Unioto. It's unfortunate. You know, keep in mind, this isn't a prank. This isn't funny. And what you're dealing with here is a crime.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is. And it really needs to be punished beyond a school. I guess the only thing I would defend some other schools is if something does happen to where we find out this is someone involved at another SVC school or whatever it might be, I hope we don't look at just that school. Every school has yahoos. You know what I mean? Every school has those things. And we as educators and there's administrations and different things, we're all trying to help kids get better. And we're all trying to do things the right way. Now, you're going to have kids do some stupid things. And if they get caught, they certainly need to be punished. But, you know, I don't think this is a reflection on any one school. I think this is just a situation where someone's committed a crime, and hopefully we can find out who and set a precedent that'll go. Because, yeah, I mean, you're dealing with a lot of hard work and money and different things to go in. I know how much time and effort we've put into our Paint Valley baseball facility, just being a coach myself. If something like this happened out there, I know how I would feel. I know what my reaction would be. So, yeah, I certainly felt for the people at Unioto and the different challenges they're going to have to go through to fix it.
Yeah. Well, maybe we can, you know, as you hear things and so forth and it comes out, or hopefully they do find out, maybe we can kind of talk about it or mention it again later. Well, there are quite a few things I'm sure we didn't get to this week. We're running short on time here, but maybe what kind of feedback you're looking for next week?
Well, we're working on some follow-up interviews on the softball side. Jeremy Ward, who was back on the show with us last week, and he's talking to some different people for us, and we might try to set up some interviews or get some audio there. Soccer is starting to develop a lot of momentum again, Bruce, in the inbox and some texting and some different things. And that was interesting to me because of our lacrosse and the 8-on-8 football and these other sports. And obviously our lead sponsor, Triple Crown Family Fun Center, has a lot to do with the promotion of soccer. They do an incredible job. So I would love to get some feedback on the soccer, on the 8-on-8 football. And then probably the number one thing that jumped out at me from our lead story this week, which was the fine email sent in, probably with myself being a teacher and a coach, I would love to get people's feel on the difference between being involved in a little league or some sort of community club or team compared to being involved in a school sponsored team or function or something like that. I think that's fascinating to me, and I would love to get some parent feedback, even some player feedback. So those are some of the things on my mind. What a great show. I love when people get involved, and we certainly have had some great feedback here in the first couple weeks of our spring.
All right. Well, that's going to put a capper on show 155 of the SEC Sports Zone, Sports Rock Talk, rather, from SVZ Sports Zone. So until next time, for Triple Crown Family Fun Center in Chillicothe, as well as all the other sponsors on the website, for DBK Media Services, and for, of course, Shane Combs, this is Bruce Knox reminding you to keep visiting SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk. And visit SVCSportsZone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.